This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 136. We're going to be to 140 before we know it, and then we're going to be to 150. What would it be? 3 times 52, 156. 20 more episodes to 156. 156 will mark 3 years. Three years I've been doing this. Doesn't hardly seem possible that it's been 3 years. It's been a good week this week. It has snapped cold here in the Ozarks. So the leaves are out in beautiful colors. Leaves are pretty this year. And we've been enjoying those. It did turn off cold. We've been getting the 70 degree weather and going, yay, great for October. Yay, great for November. And then all of a sudden, boom, it hit this week. So it was a little chilly when I walked out. I didn't check the actual temperature, but it, according to my phone, is 45 degrees out, which obviously is not cold according to some parts of the world. But that's a little bit cool for a high for us here in the Ozarks. So we're getting ready for winter around here, which is just fine. My wife is coming out of her quarantine. I think tonight will mark my return to the master bedroom. I technically could have moved back in on Tuesday, and we talked about it. She said, I've read some things that say it. You know, wait 5 days. She said, I've read other things that say wait at least 5 days. And she was supposed to have a body scan today. So I said, well, why don't you just go ahead and have your body scan on Thursday? If everything looks good, then fine and fine. I'll just move my stuff back in. So anyways, going to get that done today. Waiting for the beta copies to come in on Grumpy Old Prophets Part 1. I expect to have those in the next couple of days, be mailing those out. I'm putting the finishing touches on Grumpy Old Prophets Parts 2 and 3, which is Book 2. Got the covers pretty well knocked into shape on those, and on Part 1 and Part 2, well, Book 1 and Book 2, I've got the covers pretty well knocked into shape on those, and so I'll be ready to go into beta just as soon as we get done beta testing. Beta reading Part 1, and then probably this weekend I'm going to start running the outline for Part 4, which is Book 3. And then running the outline, I may do some outlining as well on Part 5, which is Book 4. so I kind of know where I'm going and where things are going to divide up. So this should be interesting, because I got to get this series landed and then get on to the next series, whatever that may be, which the more that I think about Amanda and the Skleeberry Tree and some potentials there, the more I like it, but I also really like Realmers, so decisions, have decisions to make. As far as work went, it's been a good week at work. Was able to get some things accomplished. Found out that I'm actually... I haven't chewed up quite as many hours as I thought I had on my major project at this point, so I've got some breathing room. Yay! That was good. That was good to find out. I thought I was going to start getting under the gun in mid-November. As it turns out, I'm not going to run out of my... my estimated hours until probably December, which is good because I need the extra time. And then we always have a little built-in for overages where we say, look, this estimate might be plus or minus 25%. So that'll give me a little extra time as well. But that's all going well, and got some things accomplished this week that I really wanted to get accomplished this week. And so it's a good week. It was a good week. Obviously, if you've been listening at all the last couple of weeks, you know that I just keep talking about this book because it's a great book. Although there's not too many more chapters left in the book, so I'm going to have to move on to something else, which is fine, because I had finished reading a book called Boomerang, and there's other interesting things going on in the world. But this book, Willpower, Rediscovering the Greatest Human Strength, it's a tremendous book, really tremendous book. And has a lot of really, really good stuff in it. This week, I would like to talk about Chapter 10, which is called The Perfect Storm of Dieting. There's some things that they say in this chapter that I'm not really hip to. I kind of back up a little bit and say, wait a minute. Because, as you know, if you've listened for any time at all to these, I am really big on free will. That we choose the characteristics of our lives. We can't always choose all the stuff that happens to us externally, but we can choose what happens to us internally. And I think there is a spot in this chapter, kind of right off the bat, where they make a statement and I think, it depends on your word definitions. And right off the bat in this chapter, they wanted to kind of lay down some ground rules and kind of give people the cliff notes in case they weren't going to read the rest of the chapter, which is interesting because they didn't, as I recall, didn't necessarily do that with the rest of the chapters. And yet in this case, they did. And they start out the chapter talking about, okay, if you're serious about controlling your weight, you need the discipline to follow these three rules. 1, never go on a diet. 2, never vow to give up chocolate or any other food. 3, whether you're judging yourself or judging others, never equate being overweight with having weak willpower. They go on to cite some examples that I'll cite in a minute, that there are a whole lot of people that are very disciplined people, which I agree with, that are tremendous business people, have the capability to do all kinds of things, you know, obviously have great willpower, but they struggle with their weight. I understand that. For me, though, at the end of the day, when we're talking about weight, for most people, I realize there's some small percentages, but for most people, it comes down to what do you put in your mouth? And for most people, what they put in their mouth is put there by themselves. They don't have people holding them down, stuffing things in their mouth. I have people tell me, well, yeah, you know, you're blessed with one of those good genetics and, you know, that high metabolism that can just burn all stuff. And I tell people all the time, look, I can put on weight fast. It is not hard for me to put on weight. I haven't actually weighed myself in a week because the scale was in the master bedroom and it was under quarantine. So I'm going to find out tomorrow where I am. I normally weigh every single day. Before this past week, you know, I was actually up a little bit. I was peaking somewhere around 178 pounds, and I like to peak at around 173, so I'm about 5 pounds overweight. And people kind of roll their eyes when I say that, but I know when I'm 5 pounds overweight. And where I really feel settled is when I'm bouncing between 167 and 172 through the week. I feel like, okay, I'm in the right slot. So at least for me personally, weight is not something that is out of my control. And when the authors use a term like willpower, and then they say being overweight doesn't mean that a person has weak willpower, for me, the term willpower comes down to the ability to exercise my free will in a positive manner, in a way that creates an environment of success for me. And doing that on a consistent basis. That's to me what willpower is. Now, I freely will admit that willpower is really interesting because the flesh, and frankly, we wouldn't need willpower if we didn't have the flesh to contend with. Because I'm convinced that if we didn't have the flesh that was always pulling us away from the right and good things that we should do, and we just had the Spirit encouraging us, we would just go do the good and right things. It's this battle with the flesh. That's the reason we need willpower. That's the reason we need free will to help us wrestle ourselves and go in the right direction. However, I will freely admit that willpower is not necessarily consistent over everyone's lives. There are certain things that I struggle with far more than other things. And everybody's like that. So just the fact that someone has been successful and they have great willpower when it comes to certain portions of their life, that does not mean that just because they have great willpower, they have great willpower in everything. You do get a bounce. I mean, they do talk in this book about the fact that when you improve your willpower in one area, you improve it throughout a lot of areas. The reason for that is not because willpower is completely generic through your life. The reason for that, in my opinion, is because as you start to improve your willpower, you actually reduce the influence of the flesh on your life. And when you reduce the influence of the flesh on your life, then you can hear your spirit better. And so, yes, you do get this effect of it washing over into other areas. But the flesh knows where it has its beachheads. And so it will pull back from certain areas and let you just have those areas and then say, oh, yeah, you're doing really good. And it will do that because then it can strengthen its beachhead and convince you that, well, in this one area over here, it's just the way I am. Because if it can convince you of it's just the way I am, then you can decide that you don't have free will in that situation, and you can just keep doing what the flesh wants you to do. So I don't really agree with this statement of being overweight doesn't have anything to do with willpower. Maybe in the way they define willpower, and if I redefine it, I would say being overweight has everything to do with whether or not we choose to exercise our free will in a positive manner. One of the things that would always tickle me when I would talk to people about Good Eats in Eden, which was the little experiment that I and my kids did several years ago, and my son-in-law still does it occasionally. With Good Eats in Eden, you're allowed to eat as much food as you want, so long as it's raw. So you can have fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, nuts. That's it. Nothing processed, nothing cooked. Ta-da. And it's amazing. I mean, you start on this thing, and after about 3 days, 4 days of it, food gets quiet. The chips aren't calling your name anymore. You know, the cookies aren't whistling at you. Because you've made a commitment to this that you're only going to eat raw foods. And in a given week, you know, 10 days, you're supposed to be on it for 10 days, in a given 10 days, you can lose 14 pounds. What's interesting when I've talked to people about that, and I actually have had people call me up and say, okay, now what is it? How do you do it? Because, you know, everybody wants to lose weight. Well, what's your plan? Well, plan's pretty simple. 10 days, raw fruits, raw vegetables, raw nuts, nothing cooked, nothing packaged, no sauces, 10 days. Eat as much as you want. Just drink water. I was talking to one lady and she went, no meat? I said, no meat. Well, I just couldn't do that. I can't do meat. Well, It's not that she can't do it. It's that she chooses not to. She chooses not to exercise her free will in a manner that's beneficial. So I'm going to come back around to that after we get working through a lot of the stuff they talked about in this chapter. But a lot of the stuff they talked about in this chapter is really interesting. Some just really interesting tidbits. One of them is what they called the King Henry VIII and Oprah Winfrey effect. The King Henry VIII was portly, and at that time, in order to be portly, you had to have a whole team of people around you, because there had to be lots of food, and it had to be prepared, and you had to just be shoveling it in, because all the people that were out, the serfs working in the field, they were not overweight. I mean, they barely got enough to eat. They're all skinny. King Henry VIII, big. Our society now has turned that on its head, where in order to get thin, some people think that you've got to have this whole battery of people like Oprah Winfrey did. You know, that you got to have dietitians and nutritionists and spiritual advisors. That's a very interesting thought that our society has come to that point. There's another interesting tidbit in the introductory parts of the chapter about how there is some agency in London that will take your bet on whether or not you can lose weight. And based on who you are and how long you've been overweight and what your goals are, you can set your own goals and then they'll look at it and they will bet against you up to 20 to 1 that you are not going to lose the weight. Up to 20 to 1. And they said 80% of the time they win. People don't lose the weight. So it's a big problem. Big problems. Okay, so what do these guys talk about in this book? What are their suggestions? There's some good, solid, interesting suggestions. First of all, is that you need to be aware of what is called, in the colloquialism, the what the hell effect. And what they did was, is they pulled in people and they said, okay, let's make you food testers. So here's cookies and crackers, and what we want you to do is just taste a little bit and then grade them. Of course, they weren't food testers. They wanted to see how much they would eat. So they brought in groups of people that weren't dieters. They split them up. They told everybody, okay, don't eat any food for X number of hours before you came in. Then some of them they brought in, and they said, well, we want to take the edge off your hunger, so here's two milkshakes. Down both of these milkshakes, and then go in and do the food testing. Other ones, they gave them just a little bit of a milkshake. Other ones, they said, okay, just go into the food testing. And so what they were trying to figure out is, okay, if we know that willpower is associated with glucose levels, if we give people milkshakes, will this help them or hinder them in their self-control? They said, obviously, the people who hadn't ate, who were depleted in their glucose, of course, went in and ate a bunch of crackers, ate a bunch of cookies, more than the people who had the milkshakes, whether it was two glasses or half. Person that had half, people that had two glasses, about the same, but, you know, the people that had two, they were pretty sated, and so they just sort of nibbled a little bit and grated and went. What was really interesting is the people who were dieting. They gave them the two milkshakes, and the people who were dieting consumed more cookies and crackers than the people who hadn't had anything at all. And they had a big, fancy term for this that they called counter-regulatory eating. But I like the colloquial term, which is the what the hell effect. And the idea was that dieters are just constantly aware of food. Basically, their flesh is beaten up all the time about food. Food is talking to them, talking to them. And as soon as they had the two milkshakes, the flesh was able to press its advantage to them and convince them and say, well, you know, you're already over your caloric account, but doesn't make any difference now. You know, you can just do whatever you want. And that's what would happen. So people who were focusing on dieting, when they'd have the two milkshakes, they would go in and just snarf down the cookies and crackers. So what do we learn from the what the hell effect? What we learn is, don't fall into that trap. Ooh, lots of mail today. I'm getting my mail. Don't fall into that trap. Be aware that that trap is there. So if you're supposedly on a diet, and if supposedly you fall off the wagon because you have like a fudge dessert or something like that, stop eating. Don't let your flesh talk you into the fact of, well, you know, you've already blown it anyway, so let's just go through that whole bag of bonbons. Yeah, don't do that. And so one of their points is, which is good, be aware that this is going to happen. Next point is what they call the dieter's catch-22. The dieter's catch-22 is that we have established that you need glucose in your brain in order to make good decisions. And I mentioned several weeks ago that I'm eating smaller portions through the day, and that it really does work. I'm backing into my garage. So you need glucose in your brain. I'm talking louder because I'm backing into my garage. You need glucose in your brain in order to make good decisions. Well, if you're dieting, you might not be eating enough to get your brain powered. And so you end up in the dieter's catch-22, which is, one, in order not to eat, a dieter needs willpower. Two, in order to have willpower, a dieter needs to eat. Okay, that's not so good. So what they suggest in the book is, if you're faced with that situation and you're really craving something because you're low on glucose, they have a technique called the postponement technique, which we're going to talk about in a minute. They say try using that, but then also try to funnel yourself into ways of getting glucose without spiking your sugar. In other words, complex carbohydrates. You know, for me, that's what I use during the day is lentils, brown rice with some hot sauce on it so that it, you know, it's got some kick to it. And it's perfectly savory to me. Granted, it's not, you know, a fudge ice cream thing, but I don't need a fudge ice cream thing. Oh, John is coming. I may need to finish this up. He's out for a run. John is my next door neighbor guy. So I may need to get out and say hello. How are you, buddy? So what's up with you? Running, good. You want to be on my podcast today? Sure. Hold on. Wait a minute. There you go.
Good morning, Claire.
No, this is driving home, and I have driven home. So I'm like recording right now.
Oh, okay.
So this is John, everyone, all three people who actually listen to this. So
hello, three people.
Anyways, so we're talking about willpower and dieting and how to diet and all that kind of stuff. The other thing they say is you got to plan for the battle.
Agreed.
Yes, agreed. Plan for the battle. So you have to, if you have M&Ms, you got to move them out of the house. I got some peanut M&Ms, you know, for the Halloween thing. I was proud of my wife, Lynette, because Aunt Nett actually the day afterwards took them all and she put them in a plastic container and she put them on the top shelf in the pantry, shoved them all the way in the back because she said, I don't want them around because I'll eat them. So you got to plan for the battle. That's good. Weighing every day, they say it's good. Even though some people say you only weigh once a week, they say weigh every day is good. Because you got to have something that you're working against. And then never say never. There was this study. This is very interesting. This is fascinating. There was this study where they brought people in. They had a bowl of M&Ms in front of them. And then they said, Okay, here's the deal. They divided them up. One group, they said, you can just eat as many M&Ms as you want. Just go ahead and eat the M&Ms. Another group, they said, try to think real hard about the fact that you're not going to eat any M&Ms. Just don't eat them. Don't eat them. Don't eat them. Don't eat them. Another group, they said, every time you look at the M&M bowl, say, wow, those really look good. Maybe I'll have some later. So the first group was, you just do whatever you want. Second group was, try to completely resist. Third group was, don't resist, just say, I'll do it later. Okay? So then after the test is over, they have them fill out a form. How'd you do that kind of stuff? And then they told them, these psychologists, they're sneaky. They told them, oh, yeah, hey, you know, we have a bunch of M&Ms that were left over. So I got to go do some other things. So if you want some, that's fine. You can just, because they wanted to see how many they would eat afterwards.
Wow.
Okay. So the people who were chowing down on the M&Ms, of course, they ate more M&Ms because they wanted more. The people that were like, I'm not going to eat any. I'm not going to eat any. I'm not going to eat. When they got in there and they thought no one was looking, but the people who told themselves, I'm not going to have any, but maybe I'll have some later. They actually did the best of all. There's something that goes on that if you can kind of like trick yourself into thinking, if I just have some later, there's like something that happens and it's like, okay, I don't need it now then. Which is pretty interesting.
Interesting.
So anyways, that's from a book, the book 10, chapter 10 called, I can't remember what it's called. It's in here somewhere. There it is. Chapter 10, The Perfect Storm of Dieting. And those are some suggestions that they had. Yes, so it's a pretty interesting book. But obviously, at the end of the day, we all have free will. Free will is good. Just like you're exercising your free will to go out and run.
Exactly.
It's a little cold for me to run. Is it too cold? It's like 40 degrees. He's tough. John went and did the, what was it called? Hotter than hell. That's yeah. Hotter than hell. 100-mile bike ride in
Texas.
And he did good. Yeah. He finished it. What was your time?
6 hours, 3 minutes.
6 hours. 100 miles, 6 hours. It's long. Anyways, so I am Phil Farron. I have made it home. And thanks for John for stopping in. We'll talk to you later.